65. Verdict. Now that we abandon the tower, can I finally admit that I hate this place? Too many rules. From drawer 8-1, Amethyst. Memories churned in Dalinar's head as he walked down a long corridor outside the Oathgate control building in Azamir, which was covered by a magnificent bronze dome. The Grand Market, as it was called, was an enormous indoor shopping district. That would prove inconvenient when Dalinar needed to use the full Oathgate. He couldn't see any of the market currently. The control building, which had been treated as some kind of monument in the market, was now surrounded by a wooden set of walls and a new corridor. Empty of people, it was lit by sphere lamps along the walls. Sapphires. Coincidence or a gesture of respect to a Kolin visitor? At the end, the hallway opened into a small room populated by a line of Azish soldiers. They wore plated mail with colorful caps on their heads, great shields, and very long-handled axes with small heads. The whole group jumped as Dalinar entered, and then shied back, weapons held threateningly. Dalinar held his arms out to the sides, packet from Fenn in one hand, food bundle in the other.
"I am unarmed."
They spoke quickly in Azish. He didn't see the Prime or the Little Radiant, though the people in patterned robes were viziers and scions. Both were essentially Azish versions of Ardents. Except here the Ardents were involved in the government far more than was proper. A woman stepped forward, the many layers of her long extravagant robes rustling as she walked. A matching hat completed the outfit. She was important and perhaps planned to interpret for him herself.
"Time for my first attack," Dalinar thought.
He opened the packet that Fenn had given him and removed four pieces of paper. He presented them to the woman and was pleased at the shock in her eyes. She hesitantly took them, then called to some of her companions. They joined her before Dalinar, which made the guards distinctly anxious. A few had drawn triangular catery, a popular variety of short sword here in the West. He'd always wanted one. The Ardents withdrew behind the soldiers, speaking animatedly. The plan was to exchange pleasantries in this room, then for Dalinar to immediately return to Yuathiru, whereupon they intended to lock the Oathgate from their side. He wanted more. He intended to get more. Some kind of alliance, or at least a meeting with the Emperor. One of the Ardents started reading the papers to the others. The writing was in Azish, a funny language made of little markings that looked like Kremlin tracks. It lacked the elegant, sweeping verticals of the Alethi women's script. Dalinar closed his eyes, listening to the unfamiliar language. As in Thalen City, he had a moment of feeling he could almost understand. Stretching, he felt that meaning was close to him.
"Would you help me understand?" he whispered to the Stormfather. "What makes you think I can?"
"Don't be coy," Dalinar whispered. "I've spoken new languages in the visions. You can make me speak Azish."
The Stormfather rumbled in discontent.
"That wasn't me,"
he finally said.
"It was you."
"How do I use it?"
"Try touching one of them. With spiritual adhesion, you can make a connection."
Dalinar regarded the group of hostile guards, then sighed, waving and miming the act of dumping a little drink into his mouth. The soldiers exchanged sharp words, then one of the youngest was pushed forward with a canteen. Dalinar nodded in thanks, then, as he took a drink from the water bottle, grabbed the young man by the wrist and held on.
"Stormlight,"
the rumbling in his mind said. Dalinar pressed Stormlight into the other man and felt something, like a friendly sound coming from another room. All you had to do was get in. After a careful shove, the door opened, and sounds twisted and undulated in the air. Then, like music changing keys, they modulated from gibberish to sense.
"Captain!" cried the young guard that Dalinar held. "What do I do? He's got me!"
Dalinar let go, and fortunately his understanding of the language persisted.
"I'm sorry, soldier," Dalinar said, handing back the canteen. "I didn't mean to alarm you."
The young soldier stepped back among his fellows.
"The warlord speaks Aesish?"
He sounded as surprised as if he'd met a talking chol. Dalinar clasped his hands behind his back and watched the Ardents. "You insist on thinking of them as Ardents," he told himself, "because they can read, both male and female." But he was no longer in Alethkar. Despite those bulky robes and large hats, the Aesish women wore nothing on their safe hands. Sunmaker, Dalinar's ancestor, had argued that the Aesish had been in need of civilizing. He wondered if anyone had believed that argument even in those days, or if they'd all seen it for the rationalization it was. The viziers and scions finished reading, then turned toward Dalinar, lowering the pages he'd given them. He had heeded Queen Fen's plan, trusting that he couldn't bully his way through Aesir with a sword. Instead, he had brought a different kind of weapon. An essay.
"Do you truly speak our language, Alethi?" the lead vizier called.
She had a round face, dark brown eyes, and a cap covered in bright patterns. Her graying hair came out the side in a tight braid.
"I've had the opportunity to learn it recently," Dalinar said. "You are Vizier Nura, I assume?"
"Did Queen Fen really write this?"
"With her own hand, Your Grace," Dalinar said. "Feel free to contact Thalen City to confirm."
They huddled to consult again in quiet tones. The essay was a lengthy but compelling argument for the economic value of the oath gates to the cities that hosted them. Fen argued that Dalinar's desperation to forge an alliance made for the perfect opportunity to secure beneficial and lasting trade deals through Urethiru. Even if Aesir had no plans to fully join the coalition, they should negotiate use of the oath gates and send a delegation to the tower. It spent a lot of words saying what was obvious and was exactly the sort of thing Dalinar had no patience for, which hopefully would make it perfect for the Aesish. And if it wasn't quite sufficient, well, Dalinar knew never to go into battle without fresh troops in reserve.
"Your Highness," Nura said, "as impressed as we are that you cared to learn our language, and even considering the compelling argument presented here, we think it best if—"
She trailed off as Dalinar reached in his packet and withdrew a second sheaf of papers, 6 pages this time. He held them up before the group like a raised banner, then proffered them. A nearby guard jumped back, making his mail jingle. The small chamber grew quiet. Finally, a guard accepted the papers and took them to the viziers and scions. A shorter man among them began reading quietly. This one was an extended treatise from Navani, talking about the wonders they'd discovered in Urethiru, formally inviting the Aesish scholars to visit and share. She made clever arguments about the importance of new fabrials and technology in fighting the Voidbringers. She included diagrams of the tents she'd made to help them fight during the Weeping, and explained her theories for floating towers. Then, with Dalinar's permission, she offered a gift. Detailed schematics that Taravangian had brought from Yakaved, explaining the creation of so-called half-shards, fabrial shields that could withstand a few blows from shard blades. "The enemy is united against us," went her essay's final argument. "They have the unique advantages of focus, harmony, and memories that extend far into the past. Resisting them will require our greatest minds, whether Alethi, Aesish, Vaden, or Thalen. I freely give state secrets, for the days of hoarding knowledge are gone. Now we either learn together or we fall individually." The viziers finished, Then they passed around the schematics, studying them for an extended time. When the group looked back at Dalinar, he could see that their attitude was changing. Remarkably, this was working. Well, he didn't know much about essays, but he had an instinct for combat. When your opponent was gasping for breath, you didn't let him get back up. You rammed your sword right into his throat. Dalinar reached into his packet and removed the last paper inside, a single sheet written on front and back. He held it up between his first two fingers. The Azish watched it with wide eyes as if he'd revealed a glowing gemstone of incalculable wealth. This time, Vizier Nura herself stepped forward and took it. "Verdict," she read from the top, "by Yasna Kolin." The others pushed through the guards, gathering around, and began reading it to themselves. Though this was the shortest of the essays, he heard them whispering and marveling over it.
"Look, it incorporates all seven of Aku's logical forms. That's an allusion to the Grand Orientation and storms. She quotes Prime Kasim Marlex in three successive stages, each escalating the same quote to a different level of superior understanding."
One woman held her hand to her mouth.
"It's written entirely in a single rhythmic meter." "Great Yezir," Nura said. "You're right." "The illusions, such wordplay, the momentum and rhetoric."
Logic spren burst around them in the shape of little storm clouds. Then, practically as one, the scions and viziers turned to Dalinar.
"This is a work of art," Nura said.
"Is it persuasive?" Dalinar asked.
"It provokes further consideration,"
Nura said, looking to the others, who nodded.
"You actually came alone. We are shocked by that. Aren't you worried for your safety?"
"You're radiant," Dalinar said, "has proven to be wise for one so young. I am certain I can depend on her for my safety."
"I don't know that I depend on her for anything," said one of the men, chuckling. "Unless it's swiping your pocket change."
"All the same," Dalinar said, "I have come begging you to trust me. This seemed the best proof of my intentions."
He spread his hands to the sides.
"Do not send me back immediately. Let us talk as allies, not men in a battlefield tent of parley."
"I will bring these essays before the Prime and his formal council," Vizier Nura finally said. "I admit he seems fond of you, despite your inexplicable invasion of his dreams. Come with us."
That would lead him away from the Oath Gate and any chance he had at transferring home in an emergency. But that was what he'd been hoping for.
"Gladly, Your Grace."
They walked along a twisting path through the dome-covered market, which was now empty, like a ghost town. Many of the streets ended at barricades manned by troops. They'd turned the Azimir Grand Market into a kind of reverse fortress, intended to protect the city from whatever might come through the Oath Gate. If troops left the control building, they would find themselves in a maze of confusing streets. Unfortunately for the Azish, the control building alone was not the gate. A radiant could make this entire dome vanish, replaced with an army in the middle of Azimir. He'd have to be delicate about how he explained that. He walked with Vizier Nura, followed by the other scribes, who passed the essays around again. Nura didn't make small talk with him, and Dalinar maintained no illusions. This trip through the dark indoor streets with packed market buildings and twisting paths was meant to confuse him, should he try to remember the way. They eventually climbed up to a second level and left through a doorway out onto a ledge along the outside rim of the dome. Clever. From up here, he could see that the ground floor exits from the market were barricaded or sealed off. The only clear way out was up that flight of steps onto this platform around the circumference of the large bronze dome, then down another set of steps. From this upper ramp he could see some of Azamir, and was relieved by how little destruction he saw. Some of the neighborhoods on the west side of the city seemed to have collapsed, but all in all, the city had weathered the Everstorm in good shape. Most of the structures were stone here, and the grand domes, many overlaid with reddish-gold bronze, reflected the sunlight like molten marbles. The people wore colorful clothing, of patterns that scribes could read like a language. This summer season was warmer than he was accustomed to. Dalinar turned east. Eurythiru lay somewhere in that direction, in the border mountains, far closer to Aesir than to Alethkar.
"This way, Blackthorn," Nora said, starting down the wooden ramp.
It was constructed upon a woodwork lattice. Seeing those wooden stilts, Dalinar had a moment of surreal memory. It vaguely reminded him of something, of perching above a city and looking down at wooden lattices. Rathalos, he thought. The Rift. The city that had rebelled. Right. He felt a chill on the pressure of something hidden trying to thrust itself into his consciousness. There was more to remember about that place. He walked down the ramp and took it as a mark of respect that two entire divisions of troops surrounded the dome.
"Shouldn't those men be on the walls?" Dalinar asked. "What if the Voidbringers attack?"
"They've withdrawn through Imul," Nora said. "Most of that country is on fire by now, due to either the Parshmen or Tezim's armies."
Tezim, who was a herald. Surely he wouldn't side with the enemy, would he? Perhaps the best thing they could hope for was a war between the Voidbringers and the armies of a mad herald. Rickshaws waited for them below. Nora joined him in one. It was novel being pulled by a man acting like a chal. Though it was faster than a palanquin, Dalinar found it far less stately. The city was laid out in a very orderly manner. Nabani had always admired that. He watched for more signs of destruction, and while he found few, a different oddity struck him. Masses of people, standing in clumps, wearing colorful vests, loose trousers or skirts, and patterned caps. They shouted about unfairness, and though they looked angry, they were surrounded by logic spren.
"What's all this?" Dalinar asked.
"Protesters."
She looked to him and obviously noted his confusion.
"They've lodged a formal complaint, rejecting an order to exit the city and work the farms. This gives them a 1 month period to make their grievances known before being forced to comply."
"They can simply disobey an imperial order?"
"I suppose you'd merely march everyone out at sword point. Well, we don't do things that way here. There are processes. Our people aren't slaves."
Dalinar found himself bristling. She obviously didn't know much about Alethkar, if she assumed all Alethi dark eyes were like chulls to be herded around. The lower classes had a long and proud tradition of rites related to their social ranking.
"Those people," he said, realizing something, "have been ordered to the fields because you lost your parshmen."
"Our fields haven't yet been planted," Nora said, eyes growing distant. "It's like they knew the very best time to cripple us by leaving. Carpenters and cobblers must be pressed into manual labor just to prevent a famine. We might feed ourselves, but our trades and infrastructure will be devastated."
In Alethkar, they hadn't been as fixated on this, as reclaiming the kingdom was more pressing. In Thelena, the disaster had been physical, the city ravaged. Both kingdoms had been distracted from a more subversive disaster, the economic one.
"How did it happen?" Dalinar asked. "The Parshmen leaving."
"They gathered in the storm," she said, "leaving homes and walking right out into it. Some reports said the Parshmen claimed to hear the beating of drums. Other reports, these are all very contradictory, speak of Spren guiding the Parshmen."
They swarmed the city gates, threw them open in the rain, then moved out onto the plain surrounding the city. The next day, they demanded formal economic redress for improper appropriation of their labors. They claimed the subsection of the rules exempting parchment from wages was extra-legal, and put a motion through the courts. We were negotiating, a bizarre experience, I must say, before some of their leaders got them marching off instead.
Interesting. Alethi Parshman had acted Alethi, immediately gathering for war. The Thalen Parshman had taken to the seas, and the Azish Parshman, well, they'd done something quintessentially Azish. They had lodged a complaint with the government. He had to be careful not to dwell on how amusing that sounded, if only because Navani had warned him not to underestimate the Azish. Alethi liked to joke about them. Insult one of their soldiers, it was said, and he'd submit a form requesting an opportunity to swear at you. But that was a caricature, likely about as accurate as Nora's own impression of his people always doing everything by the sword and spear. Once at the palace, Dalinar tried to follow Nora and the other scribes into the main building, but soldiers instead gestured him toward a small outbuilding.
"I was hoping," he called after Nora, "to speak with the Emperor in person."
"Unfortunately, this petition cannot be granted," she said. The group left him and strode into the Grand Palace itself, a majestic bronze building with bulbous domes. The soldiers sequestered him in a narrow chamber with a low table at the center and nice couches along the sides. They left him inside the small room alone, but took up positions outside. It wasn't quite a prison, but he obviously wasn't to be allowed to roam, either. He sighed and sat on a couch, dropping his lunch to the table beside some bowls of dried fruit and nuts. He took the span read out and sent a brief signal to Navani that meant time, the agreed sign that he was to be given another hour before anyone panicked. He rose and began pacing. How did men suffer this? In battle, you won or lost based on strength of arms. At the end of the day, you knew where you stood. This endless talking left him so uncertain. Would the viziers dismiss the essays? Yasna's reputation seemed to be powerful even here, but they'd seemed less impressed by her argument than by the way she expressed it.
"You've always worried about this, haven't you?" the Stormfather said in his mind.
"About what?"
"That the world would come to be ruled by pens and scribes, not swords and generals."
Blood of my fathers. That was true.
Was that why he insisted on negotiating himself? Why he didn't send ambassadors? Was it because deep down he didn't trust their gilded words and intricate promises, all contained in documents he couldn't read? Pieces of paper that were somehow harder than the strongest shard plate?
"The contests of kingdoms are supposed to be a masculine art," he said. "I should be able to do this myself."
The Stormfather rumbled, not truly in disagreement, just in amusement. Dalinar finally settled onto one of the couches. Might as well eat something, except his cloth-wrapped lunch lay open, crumbs on the table, the wooden curry box empty, save for a few drips. "What on Roshar?" He slowly looked up at the other couch. The slender Reshi girl perched not on the seat, but up on the backrest. She wore an oversized Azish robe and cap, and was gnawing on the sausage Navani had packed with the meal, to be cut into the curry.
"Kind of bland," she said.
"Soldier's rations," Dalinar said. "I prefer them."
"'Cause you're bland?"
"I prefer not to let a meal become a distraction." "Were you in here all along?"
She shrugged, continuing to eat his food.
"You said something earlier about men."
"I was beginning to realize that I'm uncomfortable with the idea of scribes controlling the fates of nations. The things women write are stronger than my military.
Yeah, that makes sense. Lots of boys is afraid of girls.
I'm not...
They say it changes when you grow up,
she said, leaning forward.
I wouldn't know, because I ain't going to grow. I figured it out. I just gotta stop eating. People that don't eat don't get bigger. Easy.
She said it all around mouthfuls of his food.
Easy, Dalinar said, I'm sure.
I'm gonna start any day now, she said. You want that fruit, or...
He leaned forward, pushing the two bowls of dried fruit toward her. She attacked them. Dalinar leaned back in the seat. This girl seemed so out of place. Though she was light-eyed, with pale, clear irises, that didn't matter as much in the West. The regal clothing was too big on her, and she didn't take care to keep her hair pulled back and tucked up under the cap. This entire room, this entire city, really, was an exercise in ostentation. Metal leaf-coated domes, the rickshaws, even large portions of the walls of this room. The Azish owned only a few soul casters, and famously one could make bronze. The carpeting and couches displayed bright patterns of orange and red. The Alethi favored solid colors, perhaps some embroidery. The Azish preferred their decorations to look like the product of a painter having a sneezing fit. In the middle of it all was this girl, who looked so simple. She swam through ostentation, but it didn't stick to her.
I listened to what they're saying in there, Tightbutt, the girl said, before coming here. I think they're going to deny you. They got a finger.
I should think they have many fingers.
Nah, this is an extra one. Dried out. Looks like it belonged to some grandma's grandma, but it's actually from an emperor. Emperor Snot-a-Lot or...
Snoxel? Dalinar asked.
Yeah, that's him.
He was prime when my ancestor sacked Azamir, Dalinar said with a sigh. It's a relic.
The Azish could be a superstitious lot for all their claims about logic and essays and codes of law. This relic was probably being used during their discussions as a reminder of the last time the Alethi had been in Azir.
Yeah, well, all I know is he's dead, so he ain't got to worry about... About...
Odium. The Reshi girl shivered visibly. Could you go and talk to the viziers? Dalinar asked. Tell them that you think supporting my coalition is a good idea? They listened to you when you asked to unlock the Oath Gate.
Nah, they listen to gawks, she said. The geezers that run the city don't like me much.
Dalinar grunted.
Your name is Lift, right?
Right.
And your order?
More food.
I meant your order of Knights Radiant. What powers do you have?
Oh, Edge Dancer? I slip around and stuff.
Slip around?
It's real fun, except when I run into things. Then it's only kind of fun.
Dalinar leaned forward, wishing, again, he could go in and talk to all those fools and scribes.
No. For once, trust in someone else, Dalinar.
Lift cocked her head.
Huh. You smell like her.
Her?
The crazy spren who lives in the forest.
You've met the Night Watcher?
Yeah. You?
He nodded. They sat there, uncomfortable, until the young girl handed one of her bowls of dried fruit to Dalinar. He took a piece and chewed it in silence, and she took another. They ate the entire bowl, saying nothing until the door opened. Dalinar jumped. Nura stood in the doorway, flanked by other viziers. Her eyes flickered toward Lift, and she smiled. Nura didn't seem to think as poorly of Lift as the little girl indicated. Dalinar stood up, feeling a sense of dread. He prepared his arguments, his pleas. They had to...
The Emperor and his council, Nura said, have decided to accept your invitation to visit Yuretiru.
Dalinar cut off his objection. Did she say accept?
The prime of Imul has also reached Aesir, Nura said. He brought the sage with him, and they should be willing to join us. Unfortunately, following the Parshman assault, Imul is a fraction of what it once was. I suspect he will be eager for any and every source of aid and will welcome this coalition of yours. The Prince of Tashik has an ambassador, his brother, in the city. He'll come as well. And the Princess of Yezir is reportedly coming in person to plead for aid. We'll see about her. I think she simply believes Izimir will be safer. She lives here half the year anyway. Alm and Desh have ambassadors in the city, and Leofor is always eager to join whatever we do as long as they can cater the storming meetings. I can't speak for Steen. They're a tricky bunch. I doubt you want to Tukar's priest king, and Morat is overrun. But we can bring a good sampling of the Empire to join your discussions.
Dalinar stammered.
Thank you.
It was actually happening. As they'd hoped, Aesir was the linchpin.
Well, your wife writes a good essay, Nora said.
He started.
Navani's essay was the one that convinced you, not Yasna's?
Each of the three arguments were weighed favorably and the reports from Thalen City are encouraging, Nora said. That had no small part in our decision. But while Yasna Colin's writing is every bit as impressive as her reputation suggests, there was something more authentic about Lady Navani's plea.
She is one of the most authentic people I know.
Dalinar smiled like a fool.
And she is good at getting what she wants.
Let me lead you back to the Oath Gate. We will be in contact about the Prime's visit to your city.
Dalinar collected his span reed and bade farewell to Lyft, who stood on the back of the couch and waved to him. The sky looked brighter as the viziers accompanied him back to the dome that housed the Oath Gate. He could hear them speaking eagerly as they entered the rickshaws. They seemed to be embracing this decision with gusto, now that it had been made. Dalinar passed the trip quietly, worried that he might say something brutish and ruin things. Once they entered the market dome, he did take the opportunity to mention to Nora that the Oath Gate could be used to transport everything there, including the dome itself.
I'm afraid that it's a larger security threat than you know, he finished saying to her as they reached the control building.
What would it do, she said, if we built a structure halfway across the plateau perimeter? Would it slice the thing in two? What if a person is half on, half off?
That we don't know yet, Dalinar said,
fumbling the span reed on and off in a pattern to send the signal that would bring Yasna back through the Oath Gate to fetch him.
I'll admit, Nora said softly as the other viziers chatted behind, I'm not pleased at being overruled. I am the Emperor's loyal servant, but I do not like the idea of your radiance, Dalinar Colin. These powers are dangerous, and the ancient radiance turned traitor in the end.
I will convince you, Dalinar said. We will prove ourselves to you. All I need is a chance.
The Oath Gate flashed and Yasna appeared inside. Dalinar bowed to Nora in respect, then stepped backward into the building.
You are not what I expected, Blackthorn, Nora said.
And what did you expect?
An animal, she said frankly. A half-man creature of war and blood.
Something about that struck him.
An animal.
Echoes of memories shuddered inside of him.
I was that man, Dalinar said. I've merely been blessed with enough good examples to make me aspire to something more.
He nodded to Yasna, who repositioned her sword, rotating the inner wall to initiate the transfer and take them back to Urethiru. Navani waited outside the building. Dalinar stepped out and blinked at the sunlight, chilled by the mountain cold. He smiled broadly at her, opening his mouth to tell her what her essay had done.
An animal. An animal reacts when it is prodded. Memories. You whip it, and it becomes savage.
Dalinar stumbled. He vaguely heard Navani crying out, yelling for help. His vision spun, and he fell to his knees, feeling an overwhelming nausea. He clawed at the stone, groaning, breaking fingernails. Navani was calling for a healer. She thought he'd been poisoned. It wasn't that. No, it was far, far worse. Storms. He remembered. It came crashing down on him, the weight of 1,000 boulders. He remembered what had happened to Evie. It had started in a cold fortress in highlands once claimed by Yarkoved. It had ended at the Rift.